You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned.
And we are back for yet another episode of the Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Morris Killifer.
And I do not have a fraternal twin.
And this is episode 62, continuing our back-to-school horror. It's Prom Night from 1980. It's an hour and 32 minutes and directed by Paul Lynch. Couple things to note of his. Murder, She Wrote. So we right off the bat, we got one. There's a movie called Humongous that I have yet to be able to find a copy of, but I remember watching it as a kid and it's scaring the hell out of me. All I remember is like a certain death scene where someone is getting their face rammed repeatedly into a vent like, and it freaked me out. I want to find this movie. So that's one of his. And then he did a bunch of television stuff like Twilight Zone, Ray Bradbury Theater, Dark Shadows, RoboCop the series, Sliders, Xena, all that. So, wow, let's go around the table and see what everyone thinks about the original Prom Night. Maurice, we'll start with you this week. What are your thoughts on Prom Night?
You know, I don't like it as much as I used to.
I'm just going to cut you off right there. I was so afraid that I was going to be in the, like, standing alone on this, but go ahead.
I honestly feel like it's watching it critically. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of boring.
Yep. I
there's not much going on. And when there is, it's just silliness. And, you know, you have the ending, which is really the only truly serious part. Mm-hmm. But I just don't like it. Like, I remember liking it. I don't know. Maybe watching it critically has changed my opinion that much. But yeah, I really thought I was boring. I didn't have much to write down because nothing really jumped out at me. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had a okay cast. I mean, you got Jamie Lee Curtis and Leslie Nielsen. That's about it. But, I mean, the killer was wearing a sparkling hat.
Ooh, sparklies.
I don't know if that got the Twilight phase going, but yeah, I just, yeah, don't care for it.
Well,
all I gotta say.
Susan, we'll throw it over to you. What are your thoughts?
So I'm the odd person out this time because I still like this movie. I can appreciate it for what it is. It has tropes from all different horror movies. We have, you know, the slasher killer like Jason, and we have the like perverted phone calls, quote perverted phone calls, like in Black Christmas. I think it's a silly horror movie, but I still like, I buckled in and I probably haven't seen this movie and it's been over 10 years, but oh, wow. This still holds up for me, but I wish, and I didn't want to go back and do it, but halfway through that dance sequence that Jamie Lee Curtis, that Kim and Nick do, I was like, this is like 6 hours long. How has it only been like 2 minutes? And I just feel yeah. like it was the same song playing through the entire actual prom sequence, yeah. but just with different, like, ooh, ah, thrown in there to, like, make it a little bit different. But I just think it's a silly, fun slasher movie. I definitely agree about the sparkly mask because we have Chekhov's mask earlier in the movie. Yep. It didn't sparkle. So did, and also, and I'll get to it, but some of the scenes with just where you see the killer in the sparkly mask and, you know, the cat burglar outfit, if you will, are just plain fucking ridiculous. Like, how can you not laugh at that and just say, like, this, it is what it is.
Yeah. I was afraid I would be the only one who disliked this. I was like, I'm going to get a lot of flack for this one. But Maurice, I'm glad that you pretty much stated almost exactly how I felt. Watching this critically, I picked up on so many things and I'm just like, why is this even in the fucking movie? Like, what point does this have? I mm-hmm. felt like the entire movie was I like cheese dialogue. Like, the whole... I was like, the whole fucking movie is this. It's, and it's the thing. Like, this is one of those movies I remember seeing as a kid because it was always on around Halloween time. Like, it was just
right.
one of those slashers that was on, like, hey, 30 days of horror movies type of thing.
AMC usually puts it on, yeah.
Yeah, yep. So it's one of those things I guess I've always just watched it passively, like, while doing other things. And because of that, I let nostalgia carry me through, like, oh, it's got Jamie Lee. I remember watching it as a kid. Like, of course it's good. And the last time I remember watching it, I actually watched it back to back with the remake, which I really did not enjoy the remake. But I had bought both of them on DVD and, I put them on while I was drawing. So I wasn't even paying that close of attention the last time I watched it. Now, watching it this time, I kept checking how long I had left. Now, you know that's a bad movie when you get Ooh. You keep looking at the time going, how fucking
yeah.
long?
Oh, yeah. God.
And, like, yeah, don't get me wrong. Jamie Lee, always awesome. I enjoyed her. I enjoyed Leslie Nielsen. I do actually like his serious roles. We mentioned that in Creepshow. And I do love a good whodunit. The problem was this wasn't a good whodunit. Like, it was very jumbled and messy. And there were so many opportunities for them to give you hints of, like, oh, who could it be? Instead, they set up random red herrings that had nothing to do with the fucking plot line. And just kind of like
Sykes.
Right. Just dangle them out there and be like, hey, follow this false lead. And it's just, it was really poorly done. And I feel like so a little bit that I read in the trivia makes me think some of that was down to bad editing, because it sounds like they had a little bit more planned, but it just, I don't know. It's not one of those slasher movies that I would really recommend unless A, you really love whodunits, or B, you really love Jamie Lee Curtis. Cause other than that, it's just a generic slasher.
But they had the guy, I can't remember his name, escape the mental asylum at the beginning of the movie, and you don't hear anything of him.
Yeah.
Until the end, where they're like, oh, he was caught in Milwaukee, wherever the hell they said.
That's what I'm saying. It was like,
what the hell? Why do we need to know that?
Well, because, you know, Jamie Lee was in Halloween, and in Halloween, someone escaped a mental asylum, and, you know, we're going to just throw that out there.
Right. It had all kinds of tropes, but... I'm the odd person out. I still find it entertaining.
Yeah, I'm just, I can't follow you on that one.
I'm okay.
I was okay waiting for it to end.
Yeah, Maurice, I'm in your camp on this one. I really, and this might be blasphemy to some. I really prefer Prom Night or Hello Mary Lou Prom Night 2. Wow. I really prefer that to this one, because that one is so silly and so over the top and just it's ridiculous 80s horror, whereas this was kind of like still on the cusp of like the 1970s slasher movies. we got the whole disco scene, so that it's still heavily influenced from the 70s.
Yeah,
that was the whole fucking theme of the prom.
Exactly. I kept waiting for the sweat hogs to show up.
Hey, Mr. Carter.
Mr. Hammond. Now, Mr. Hammond.
You, I don't know why I thought this, but every time I saw Lou Farmer,
oh,
he reminds me of a potato. I don't know why, but every time I saw his face, I was like, your face looks like a potato.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
I don't know if that's a smug look he always had. I don't know. I just every time I don't know why. I'll probably never know why.
You know what his name is? And this is, we're going to christen him this for this episode. His name is Lunabrow.
Yes! Oh my god, that fucking caterpillar he had.
He looked like the caveman from the old Geico commercials.
He really did. I'm sorry. I got to remember that. Like, that is just a great insult. You look like a potato. That's just like one of those insults that's going to stop someone dead in their tracks.
I'm putting that on my list of future insults, along with stop acting like a disgruntled pelican. Which, if you've watched Schitt's Creek, you would get.
I don't get it, but just the phrasing is hilarious.
Oh, watch it.
Oh,
is there a way we can get a comedy series on here? Because Mike needs to watch that. It's so ridiculous, but so funny. The mom from Home Alone plays this like alcoholic, drugged out has been. Her and her family get all of their assets seized by the IRS, and they are shipped off to like the one asset they were able to keep, which is a little town called Schitt's Creek that the dad, Eugene Levy, purchased for his son as a joke because it was such an awful town.
Okay, this actually does sound intriguing. I may have to
watch. She's a washed up soap opera actress.
I've never watched it, but I hear it's really good.
I'm sorry to get off track, but I have been laid up with a migraine for 2 days, and that is what I did.
I may have to check this out because that sounds fun.
Yeah, that and Into the Badlands. Watch that too.
Ah, yes. That one I do know is good. I've watched a couple episodes of that. But yeah, so we all kind of agree that, Susie, you like it. Me and Maurice are kind of meh. But we all agree that it's a classic whodunit, I guess.
Yeah, well, I'll take it. We'll go with that.
let's hit the cast. There's a lot of people in this movie, so I'm just gonna run through them pretty quick. But as Maurice mentioned earlier, we do have Leslie Nielsen playing Mr. Hammond. He's the principal. Obviously, we know him from the Naked Gun movies, all his comedy stuff, Dracula Dead, Loving It, Repossessed, yada yada. Creepshow, we did see him on here once before, and there is one movie I would love to get on here. It's totally a comedy, but it's got some horror elements. It goes by three different names. The name that I saw it under was called Spaceship. It's also known Naked Space, and The Creature Wasn't Nice. it has Garrett Graham in it. It's a ridiculous sci-fi comedy about this ship that picks up an alien life form, and it goes on a killing spree. It's ridiculous, but really fun. Then we have Mrs. Hammond, played by Antoinette Bauer. She was in Murder, She Wrote, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, Twilight Zone, Star Trek, the original series. Then we have Kimberly Hammond, played by Jamie Lee Curtis. Obviously, the Halloween movies, The Fog, Terror Train, Escape from New York, Scream Queens, Knives Out, bunch of stuff.
Freaky Friday with Lindsay Lohan.
True. let's see. Alex Hammond, played by Michael Tough. The Phantom Kid, The Littlest Hobo, which cracked me up. That I saw that credit in a lot of these actors' IMDb, The Littlest Hobo. He also apparently became a location scout after acting, and he did scouting work for Friday the 13th, the series, War of the Worlds, Trilogy of Terror 2, Dead Silence, like a bunch of horror stuff.
Probably best.
Yeah, I was like, I found that interesting that I was like, huh, he left acting, but he's still into horror. So that's kind of cool. Nick McBride was played by Casey Stevens. The only thing on there was The Littlest Hobo. Wendy Richards, Anne Marie Martin.
Well, he died.
Oh, did he die?
Yeah, he died of AIDS a few years later.
His
career was getting off.
Oh, that's sad. I didn't know that. Well, shit.
It is sad.
Yeah.
I wonder if he... Because there's that Nightmare on Elm Street documentary about part two.
Oh, I still got to watch that. Yeah.
I wonder if... Because I forget the guy's name, but he was friends with a lot of actors at that time. So I wonder if they knew each other.
Oh, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe being based in New York.
Yeah. It is sad how many actors we see from like the 70s and 80s who have passed from AIDS, you know?
Yeah.
But let's see. We have Wendy Richards, played by Anne-Marie Martin. Wonder Woman.
Fucking bitch.
She was in a movie that I would love to get on here and tried to get on here last year, The Boogans. It is a terribly bad but really funny horror movie about these weird turtle monsters.
All right.
She was also in monsters, huh? Yeah, she was also in Halloween 2, and she was one of the writers for Twister. I thought that was kind of fun. Then we got Mr. Sykes, played by Robert A. Silverman. He was in a lot of good stuff. He was in Rabid, The Brood, Scanners, Friday the 13th, the series, Naked Lunch, Jason X. Like, this guy was in some great flicks. Vicky, played by Peta Oliver. none of her stuff, you know, popped out at me, but the one title cracked me up. Would You Kiss a Naked Man? Was a movie she was in.
I mean, would you?
No. No, I yes. would not.
I mean, no. No, no.
Wait, what did you call Lou? Lunabrow?
Lunabrow.
All right, so we got Lou Farmer.
Lunabrow.
Lunabrow, played by David Mucci. Friday the 13th.
A.K.A. Potato Head.
Mr. Potato Head. He was in Friday the 13th, the series, Unforgiven, Kung Fu, The Legend Continues, and Goosebumps. And then we have Drew Shinnick, who was also a huge douche, played by Jeff Wincott, also The Littlest Hobo, 24, Sons of Anarchy, Lizzie Borden Chronicles, Kelly Lynch, played by Mary Beth Rubens, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, The Outer Limits, Lieutenant McBride, was played by George Tulliantos. I hope I said that right. He was in The X-Files, Scanners, Supernatural, The Twilight Zone, and he did some voices for that 80s movie Heavy Metal, which I love. And then Henry Ann was played by Melanie Morse McQuarrie, not related to Ralph McQuarrie, which I got excited when I saw the last name. I was like, ooh, Star Wars guy? But no. The only thing I saw on there was Murder by Phone. Dr. Fairchild, played by David Gardner, is in The Class of 1984, which I would have loved to get on here. That's a really fun movie. It's a disturbing movie, but it's cool. Alfred Hitchcock Presents, RoboCop the series, Detroit Rock City. Then Jude Cunningham, played by Joy Thompson, War of the Worlds. Then Seymour Slick Crane, played by Sheldon Hrabowski.
Oh, holy shit, fuckballs. Oh, that wasn't muted. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, what the hell was that?
I stood up to take off my sweater and I thought I had it muted. And then when I sat down, the chair tipped back. Sorry. You can leave that in for humor. I don't care.
No worries. But yeah, we got Seymour Slick Crane, played by Sheldon Hrabowski, who's in The Littlest Hobo. Then Sawyer, played by Rob Garrison, The Karate Kid 1 and 2, MacGyver, and Cobra Kai. Weller, played by David Bolt, another Murder by Phone, Friday the 13th, the series, and Videodrome. Then Young Nick was played by Brock Simpson. Now, this guy is in the other three Prom Night movies. He's appeared in Prom Night 2, or Hello Mary Lou, Prom Night 2, Prom Night 3, The Last Kiss, and Prom Night 4, Deliver Us from Evil. Young Wendy was played by Leslie Scott. This was her only credit. Young Robin, played by Tammy Bourne. She was in American Christmas Carol. And then, do you guys remember those raccoon cartoons? I don't even...
Yes! It was on Canadian television.
Yeah.
There was Cyril Sneer, who was like the Scrooge McDuck, and he was bad, but his son Cedric was friend to the raccoons.
Yep. Yep. That's exactly it. She did voices for those cartoons.
Of course she did.
And then there was Young Alex, played by Dean Basaki. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Concrete Angels and Night Heat. I was getting those mixed up. And then the next
Concrete
three...
Concrete Heat and Night Angels.
Yeah, I was mixing them across. But then the next three are only in this. Young Kim, played by Debbie Greenfield. Young Jude, played by Karen Forbes. And Young Kelly, played by Joyce Kite. So pretty big cast. Like there was a lot of different characters to keep track of. None of them were really that interesting.
But, I'll give you that.
The basic plot, for those of you that might not have seen this, is during a high school senior prom, a masked killer is stalking four teenagers who were responsible for an accidental death of a classmate 6 years earlier. So it's all about a whodunit and why are they out for revenge over that death. I always found this opening creepy, and I still do. Like, this still stands. We open on an abandoned school, and we hear children, like, laughing and playing inside. And it's just, like, it's just an eerie shot. Like, I don't know what it is about that scene that, like, sends shivers up my spine, but it just creeps me out.
Because you hear them yelling. Like, it opens up, and they're counting 41, 42, 43. They get to 50, and then the person who said it's a demented game of hide and seek.
Yes.
The killer is coming. The killer is coming. They're really just a little bunch of fucking asshole bullies.
True.
Led by fucking Wendy, that dumb fucking bitch. Oh, I hate her.
I have many a notes where I'm like, I know Susie wrote that dumb fucking bitch here.
Oh, I fucking hate her. Even as her stupid little, in her little leather jacket, with her stupid little half braid down the side of her face. Fuck off, girl. Choke on a dick.
Oh, damn.
So, tell us how you really feel.
The hate is strong with this one. Like, right up there with, oh, why can't I think of her name? Juno.
I was going to say the one from Descent.
I hate her as much as I hate Juno, and that's a lot of hate.
Well, as Susie said, we see these kids playing this twisted game of hide and seek where, you know, one person is the seeker is basically the killer. And when they find a kid, then they become one of the killers too. So it just keeps, you know, multiplying where there's more and more seekers until there's only one kid left. So we see Nick as one of the kids. He runs outside on the second floor ledge. Like, he's just kind of like shimmying across, like, outside the windows. And we see three other kids walking up the street by the abandoned school. And the one little girl calls out to him, and he kind of, like, shoos her away, like, yo, go on, get out of here. And this is Kim, Robin, and Alex. And Kim, the older one, says, she said that she forgot some of her school books, that she has to go back. So she leaves, and Robin and Alex are standing there, and Alex is like, come on, let's go. And Robin doesn't want to go. She's watching the kids play. So Alex is like, well, I'm not going to wait for you, and he takes off without her. So now, as Robin is watching, she slowly starts approaching the school, and we get the opening credits. So, like, the credits are kind of rolling over top of her walking creepily, toward the creepy school.
I really like the opening, because as the opening credits are shown, mm-hmm. you see the different kids trying to hide from that fucking bitch Wendy.
True.
In different spots. And it reminds me of, you said you get that creepy feeling when you, like, the abandoned school. Mm-hmm. I remember growing up, like, I was raised very strict Catholic, mm-hmm. but the church that we went to, you know, and back in the olden days, in the 50s, all the Catholic churches had their own schools attached.
Yep.
And I remember the church I went to, like, we could only go in the basement. And I remember asking why. And my parents were like, because the floors are so rotted because the school's been closed for so long that if you step on the wrong board, you'll fall through the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So every time I watch this movie, and I've seen it multiple times, I'm always like, oh, they're going to fall through the floor because the walls look the same.
Yeah.
Because I may or may not have decided to go and explore one time and there was bingo going on. Whatever. I was five.
There is one other scene later on in the film that triggers another, like, kind of creep out moment for me. And it's one of those things that shouldn't be creepy. Like I said, looking at an abandoned school shouldn't really creep me out, but it does. There's something about it that just gives me the willies. There's a scene later on before the prom where we see, like, a montage of the dark school. Like, the school is all closed down. Nobody's, you know, no classes are going on. All the lights are off. And we just see montages of, like, the hallways and the classrooms. That always creeps me out. A school at night, for whatever reason, gives me the creeps. I don't know why. The only thing I can equate it to is when I was a kid and went to Sacred Heart, there was a couple of times, very, very rarely, but a couple of times I had to go to the latchkey program. And it was like this little like room down by the gymnasium, which was like off in the new part of the school.
The boiler room?
No, the boiler room was down in the basement. But like this was like there was this new building that they built on. Like the gym used to be a different building. So then they built this like other building between them, and there were like these little rooms where they had like different meetings and like fundraisers and stuff like that. Like the anytime they did the book sale, it was always in one of those rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, when you get your $5 and you go buy your little Scholastic books,
yep.
Like it was always in one of those rooms. But the latchkey program was all the way at the end of that long building. And the bathroom was all the way back in the old building. So I remember more than a few times having to walk down that long hall with like only a few of the lights on toward the creepy dark, you know, school and use the bathroom there. And it always gave me the willies. So I don't know if that's what causes that creep out, but it's definitely there.
So why didn't you just pee in the hallway, like in a doorway? And then if someone got blamed, you'd be like, it was little Jimmy.
I didn't think about that.
I have this odd fascination with like boarded up and abandoned buildings in general, like asylums, hospitals, schools, like the Military Road School. Shane told me he went there. As long as I can ever remember, that school's always been boarded up. And then it burned like 2 years ago now, and it's still a shell. But mm-hmm. I always slow down when I drive past it because you can see the inside of the school. And like the chalkboards and some of the rooms and everything. It just, I don't know. I think there's this creepy beauty about it, but it still freaks me the fuck out.
Yep. Yeah. It's, I don't know. Abandoned hospitals are another, that's another one. Abandoned buildings in general, but hospitals and schools really freak me out.
Yeah.
It's, I also, the other one, I know we're kind of off topic here, but the other one that always gets me is like, if you're staying in a very large hotel, and you happen to like go out of your room at night and just look down the hallway in the big empty hallway. Something it's like immediate like Shining vibes. Like I get
come
spooked.
Play with us.
I definitely get spooked quick with that. But so long and short of it is Robin wants to play with the other kids, or at least she wants to go and talk to Nick. So she goes in the abandoned school. She's kind of like poking around looking. We see some of the other kids hiding, noticing her. And she eventually finds Nick and she starts talking to him. And he's like telling her to be quiet and is like trying to like shoo her away. You know, he's like, you know, get out of here. And we hear Wendy catching some of the other kids and start yelling, the killers are coming. The killers are coming.
Also, Nick is really stupid. And while Robin is looking up before she even goes in, he's like crawling, like inching across the ledge outside.
Right. Yeah,
what
no, I'm a
dumb
that.
Asshole. Oh, you did? I'm sorry.
No worries. But yeah, so he's just a tool bag because rather than continuing to hide, he just turns on Robin. Like Wendy and the others hadn't even found him yet. He just starts yelling, "The killers are coming," and creeps Robin out. So Robin runs out into the hallway. Nick chases her. Wendy and the others show up, and then they just start like slowly walking toward Robin, yelling, "Kill, kill, kill." Robin's begging them to stop, saying she doesn't want to play. They corner her in a window. Like she backs up and backs up, and eventually she's up against a window, and the window gives way. She falls out and hits the ground. Now, there's a second floor on shards of glass. Now, immediately, Kelly just starts bawling. Nick is like, we need to get help. And Wendy's like, the fuck you say? Like, she basically forces them to pull an I Know What You Did Last Summer.
That's like, what I wrote. Take it to the grave pact.
Yep. You know, she's just like, none of you all are saying nothing. You see? We're taking to the grave. You see? And so they all swear. They get on their bikes and they take off, leaving Robin for dead. And we see somebody, right as the kids ride their bikes away, we see a shadow of someone standing over Robin's corpse. And then we cut to Mr. Hammond in the window that Robin fell out of, like, later that night.
But we need to mention that not only did she fall out of the window onto shards of glass, but let's cut her head off by making the other window fall and break, and the shard just cut her at the neck.
Oh, that's true. I forgot about that part. But yeah, that's, I mean, it was pretty gruesome, like a horrible way for someone to go. But yeah, so we cut to Mr. Hammond, and he's standing in the window that Robin fell out of. It's now nighttime. He's looking horribly somber. And then we hear a police voiceover saying, probably the victim of a sexual attack. She must have resisted. We think we know who's responsible. We'll pick him up for questioning. So we see the police arriving outside. Mr. Hammond goes running downstairs. We meet Mrs. Hammond, and we see the kids, Alex and Kim, from earlier. The paramedics are now taking Robin's corpse into the ambulance, and the whole family just kind of embraces, crying. And as the ambulance doors close, we cut, like, black screen, and it says 6 years later. And then now we're looking at a gravestone, and it says Robin Ann Hammond, 1964 to 1974, too soon taken from us. And we see the mom putting flowers down in the grave, and then, you know, the kids do the same, and kind of everyone, one by one, says their goodbyes and leaves. So at home, we see Mrs. Hammond staring at a picture of her dead daughter and just kind of looking out of it. Mr. Hammond comes up behind her and hugs her. And then Alex and Kim are in the kitchen eating breakfast and discussing prom dates. And she's trying to tell Alex to take Jude to the prom. And she's like, you know, come on, she's pretty. And he's like, wolf. Like, he just has no interest. and so they're talking about, you know, getting some date is better than no date. And then we cut to the kids leaving for school with Mr. Hammond. And when they get there, it's, Alexander Hamilton Senior High, which apparently that high school is in every one of the prom night movies. I saw the little bit of trivia. This is also where we meet Mr. Sykes, the groundskeeper. And Mr. Hammond, you know, Mr. says good morning. Mr. Hammond greets him good morning, and the kids are like, oh, he's fucking creepy. Like, they want nothing to do with Mr. Sykes.
Yeah, doesn't Kim say something like, oh, he watches girls in the changing room?
Yeah. And Mr. Hammond is like, oh, that's just hearsay. It's like, and then we cut to creepy Mr. Sykes, like, sweating profusely and staring at them.
As he sweeps up leaves?
Oh, he was trimming hedges.
Oh, trimming hedges, that's right.
He had the cropsy shears. But, yeah, so now we get a slow zoom in on someone making phone calls in a dark room.
On a rotary phone.
Yes, old school.
For you people, for our younger listeners, back in the day when people had landlines before there was touchtone, there was an actual dial on your phone. So it would go, you would dial a two and it would go. And that's exactly how it sounded.
In the before times, the long, long ago.
Yes, the long, long ago, yes. And then we get Jude in the prank call.
Yes. So we see this person, and we hear them breathing heavy and, like, in this raspy voice. When Jude picks up the phone, they're like, he asks if Jude can come out and play, and then tells her he'll see her at prom tonight. And she doesn't look amused. Her mom is like, who was that? And she's like, what did she say, an obscene phone call, and it wasn't even that good?
Yeah, it wasn't even that obscene.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
So she leaves for school, and then a nerd in a rape van pulls up and asks her if she needs a ride.
That's what I wrote, nerd in a rape van.
I was like, what the fuck is this? And somehow I completely blanked out on how Seymour and Jude end up together, because he's going on about, like, you know, only offering the beautiful girls a ride to school, and she hops in. She's like, okay, then. It's like, wow, because simpler times, man.
She wants a ride to the prom, and she's like, oh, if he's got a big fro, he's probably got something else that's really big, like a wallet. I was going with Wally, you sickos.
Oh, right. Lordy, lordy. I thought you were going with Fro Down Below.
I mean, read into it what you will.
I mean, it was the 70s, or no, it was the 80s, but still, you know.
It was 1980, so it was just on the cusp of a new decade.
Yeah, so we're still talking Fro Down Below.
Right.
but anywho. So yeah, freaking, what do you say, Seymour Slick?
He says something Slick. Like, you can call me Slick.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. That was
and
so
she's bad. Like, what rhymes with Slick that I want to get tonight? Hey, high school seniors, I understand. That's like if I did not do it on prom night. I went with one of my good friends who then left with the girl that he had a crush on. And I went and got shit-faced at a hotel that had a real live gigantic parrot in the lobby over in Canada.
Fun times.
Yeah. But, you know, typical high school movie, prom night, you get a little.
Oh, yeah. So her and Slick drive away in the rape van.
Jinkies.
And then we cut to another raspy voice calling somebody. This time it's Kelly. And the voice says, it's been a long time. Tonight it's my turn. And then hangs up. I love her confused face, the actress who plays Kelly. Because she looks like she reminds me of like a character that like someone from Winnie the Pooh. Like she just wants to go like, oh, Bava. You know, like she just has that. She looks like Winnie the Pooh. So then she looks all like nervous and the doorbell rings. She goes and looks outside. No one's there. She's like, Drew, is that you? Oh, bother. And then Drew slipped in through the back door. Womp, womp. So he scares her. She tells him about the call and he's like, oh, I bet it turns you on. Maybe I should do that. Like he's just, Drew is a dick throughout the entire movie.
Yep.
Then we cut to Nick's house and we see his dad, who is Lieutenant McBride, you know, putting on his holster. And we see Nick looking at the phone and ignoring it and saying, we got to get to school. So Lieutenant McBride is asking him, he's like, why didn't you answer? And he goes, oh, it's just Wendy. She wants me to take her to the prom, but I'm done with her. I'm taking Kim. And the dad's like, I wish I had your problems. And then we cut back to the caller not getting an answer and scratching out Nick's name on a list. So,
like, really scratching it out. Like, he should have broken that pencil tip.
Right. Like, he was pissed. And then we cut to Lieutenant McBride at work. He's looking over a file and having a flashback to the night of Robin's death. It shows, like, they're talking about the officers that went to go find the guy for questioning. They run him off the road, and they done fucked up because he gets into a car accident.
His car accident is minimal. His car fucking flipped and caught on fire.
Well, keep in mind, these were vehicles made in the 70s, so they were made out of napalm.
That's true.
Because every car in a 70s or 80s movie just explodes with the mildest tap. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the guy gets out on fire and the cops watch him like, oh shit, this is gonna be a lot of paperwork. Like they don't try to help him. They just look like, oh damn. So now we see in the flashback, we see Lieutenant McBride talking to a doctor at the hospital, and this individual that they were chasing is all bandaged up and fucked up. And basically the doctor's telling him how bad he fucked up, you know, like your boys really did a number on this guy. And then we cut to present day. We see the doc from the flashback arriving at the police station, and McBride is telling, you know, is talking to him about Leonard March, which is the guy that they tried to catch all those years ago, that he escaped his mental hospital and kidnapped a nurse. And he wants the doctor's opinion on whether or not he'll come back to the town. And the doc's like, for what? And he's like, for revenge. So we dangle this red herring out there, like, look, escaped mental patient with a motive, you know.
Catatonic schizophrenic. Sounds right to me.
And then while the doctor's like, oh, I don't know. I don't know nothing. Then Lieutenant McBride gets a phone call and he turns to the doctor and he's like, the nurse's body was found at the old school. He's back. It's like, dun, dun, dun. And then we cut to the shadowy caller calling Wendy this time. And Wendy picks up the phone. He's like, do you still like to play games? And she goes, get lost, Lou, and hangs up on him. So it's our first mention of Lunabrow.
Yep.
So she goes downstairs and Wendy is such a bitch. And
so fucking awful to the housekeeper.
Yes.
Will you be home for dinner? And what does she say? Like, I don't fucking know.
Like, how the hell should I know? And she lights a cigarette in front of her. It's like, oh, you're such a bitch. I even wrote here, Susie is going to say this woman's a real fucking bitch.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I fucking can't stand her.
So she hops in her car and heads off to school. So we cut to school and we see the kids between class in the hallway. And we get our first look at Lunabrow, who's just smoking in the hallway. I know simpler times and whatnot, but I didn't think that was allowed even in the early 80s.
It wasn't. But he was also probably ashing into the water fountain that he was standing up against.
Yeah.
Him and his goons.
Oh, God. His fucking goons. I wrote, he looks like a fucking Dick Tracy villain.
Oh, my God. He looks kind of like Flat Top.
He works with Flat Top. He's the brow.
Yes. He is the grandson of Flat Top, called the Lunabrow.
It's so bad.
Also, Dick Tracy's an awesome movie from 1990 starring Warren Beatty and Madonna and Al Pacino.
I'll agree. It definitely doesn't get the credit it deserves. I love the makeup effects in that, but that's a topic for another time.
Right.
Was a good movie.
But then, so Lou comes up behind, we see Kim, Jude, Kim, and Vicky talking, and they're all talking about Jude's ride in the rape van, and subsequently now how she has a date to the prom. And then Lou comes up behind him and says, now I know why Kim won't go out with me. She likes girls. And she says, better than kissing an ashtray, and they try to go walk away, and Lou grabs her ass, and she just turns around and goes, you ape.
Like, I mean, she's not wrong.
I was going to say, I mean, he is very ape-like, so...
Cro-Magnon. I don't even think an ape would do that.
Right? So now they come up on... the girls are... They continue walking down the hall, and they come up on Wendy kissing Nick in the hall. Wendy sees Kim and bails. And then Nick tells Kim, he's like, I told her it was over. And she goes, yeah, it worked really well. And they continue walking, and Nick looks all like, oh, damn it, like, I fucked up. The bell rings, they start going to class, and Vicky turns around and assures Nick that Kim is smiling. You know, she thinks it's funny, so she's not mad. Now we cut to the cop and the doc arriving at the old school where the nurse's body is. The doc tells McBride that he thinks Leonard is indeed back for revenge. And the other cop on the scene shows McBride a photo of a rusty old blue punch bug. And tells him that Leonard was last seen in this vehicle. So they put out an APB on it. The doc tells McBride to keep it all hush-hush to avoid spooking the town. He's like, if you want to catch this guy, you want to be quiet about this search. Because if he hears that you're looking for him, he might jump town. And you're going to freak out your entire population in the process. So
I would like to bring up something.
What's up?
So prom... traditionally, and I have a few other items about prom that I'll list as we go through,
mm-hmm.
but prom takes place in the spring, just before graduation, so middle to end of June.
Right.
Why does the entire scene look so, why does the entire movie look so autumnal? Like, you can see their breath as they're talking in the school.
Yeah. No, you're right. It definitely does look like it's taking place in, like, October.
Yeah.
I'm very
confused.
It's what movie?
Well, maybe they had a June, like how we had a May, where it snowed.
True.
Maurice, global warming is a hoax. Stop that nonsense. Right.
I forgot.
Fake news, damn it, fake news.
So anyway.
We'll just say Mother Nature was off her meds that day.
Yes, I'll agree.
So, yeah, so basically they decide they need to try to catch Leonard, so they put out an APB on the car. Now, back at the school, we see Kim practicing her disco moves for the prom, which just, oh, God, there's so much disco dancing in this movie.
I will give it to Jamie Lee. Like, I love her. Like, True Lies, yeah. That striptease that she does, that's amazing. Like,
yep.
We'll take that out of the equation, but girl's got some moves. I mean, you got to give it to her.
Oh, yeah. No. Trust me. Her and Sigourney Weaver were my two childhood crushes. Like, and I still think they're both pretty. So it's like, I have an undying love for Jamie Lee and Sigourney Weaver.
They've aged well.
Oh yeah. Yes, they have. But yeah, so she's doing her little disco dance and Wendy comes in and basically, you know, they have a little taunt back and forth and she's like, the boy is mine type of thing. And,
all right, Randy.
I was thinking about that the whole time they were arguing.
I know, right? I'm like, the boy is mine. I'm sorry that you seem to be confused. He belongs to me. That boy is mine. All right, even though I'm a metalhead, I can appreciate me some 90s R&B and pop.
Yep. But so they're arguing back and forth, and then Wendy finally ends it with, she's like, just because he's going to the prom with you doesn't mean anything. After prom, everything will go back to normal. And she says, oh yeah, who are you going to the prom with? And she goes, it's not who you go to the prom with, it's who you leave with.
And that's the only quote that is in all four movies.
Yep, exactly. It's the famous quote that doesn't even really, you know, have much to do with anything.
Right.
So now we cut to the shadowy figure who was making the phone calls, and he's tearing pictures out of the yearbook, but it's only the kids involved in Robin's death. Then we cut to the cafeteria, and there's this awkward moment between Jude and Slick where they're kind of like, hey, we just met, but we're totally gonna fuck later. Like, they have this like really awkward moment. And then we see Kim and Vicky in the lunch line. And Lou comes up wearing a ski mask and grabs
Lunabrow.
Yeah.
Oh, good he's old so Lunabrow. Fucking rapey.
Oh, God. There's so much of that in this movie.
There is. Like, it. I still enjoy the movie for what it is, but there is so much rapiness in, like, yes. 70s and 80s horror movies.
Oh, big time. There's a lot of, like, if the girl doesn't put out, she's a bitch type attitude. It's right. Crazy. Yeah, like it's really disturbing how frequent that pops up. But he comes up behind her wearing the mask and he grabs her and goes, you like me better now? And she goes, it's an improvement. And she goes, well, if you like it so much, why don't you taste it? And he grabs her and starts like eating her face through the mask. yeah.
I would have projectile vomited all over him.
It was pretty damn nasty. And then she's struggling and yelling no. And he's like, come on, be nice, and keeps trying. So now Alex runs up and clocks Lou in the face. So Lunabrow's goons attack. Alex is able to fight him. He's kind of holding his own until Lou sneaks up and cheap shots him in the ribs. So, you know, he ends up falling down. They start beating on Alex. The teachers come up and break it up. And they bring Alex and Lou down to the principal's office. Now, once they get down there, Lou tries to play innocent. And when Hammond finds out that Alex only attacked Lou because he was groping on Kim, Lou gets all pissed and is like, oh, I knew it. And Principal Hammond goes, knew what? He goes, that I'd play favorites because Alex is my son? Well, you're damn right. You've been nothing but a disgrace to this school and this community. You're suspended indefinitely. I'm like, all right, Leslie Nielsen, I like that.
But let's stop and think, like, how much would it suck for your parent to be the principal at your high school?
Oh, big time. Big time.
Like, I think about my dad and how he is, and, like, I probably, if he had gone down that path, I probably would be homeless, giving hand jobs for crack right now. Not really. Not really.
Oh, now I got the South Park song stuck in my head.
Yes, that was my goal. Achieved.
Oh, living on the street, giving handjobs for crack.
But here we truly see Chekhov's ski mask with
yes.
sand sparkle.
And well, and after he suspends Lou, he says, you know, now get out of my office. And Lou looks at Alex and he's like, see you around. Like he gives him that like shoulder bump type of thing.
Yeah.
And then Hammond tells Alex to go see the nurse and he throws out the ski mask. And this is where I put the camera lingers on Chekhov's ski mask. Foreshadow.
But do you know why it was sparkly in the end? Because it's prom and you have to be fabulous.
Yeah, okay.
It was a disco ski mask.
Right.
There we go.
I also want to point out, because the next scene we go to like Nick and Kim walking along what...
Well, let me catch up.
Skipping something?
There's one key moment right after they linger on the mask. And then Hammond looks up out the window and we see the rusty blue punch bug drive by the school.
That's right.
So it's like, oh, there's the escaped mental patient. So, and then go ahead.
So then we fast forward and like, how long is this fucking school day? Right. So right. They're walking along like this little paved walkway in a beautiful park with like trees and like grassy knolls and a little cliff. And they're just like talking, what fucking time is it? Because I know that, and I'll get to it a little bit later, but did proms change in the 90s? Because prom was so close to graduation for me that it was when the seniors were essentially done with exams, done with classes. So maybe I took an exam in the morning, but I was done by like 11 a.m., and right. I'm not going to lie, I'm not high maintenance, but I did go and get my hair and makeup done and my nails done for prom because I was 17 and that's what you did. You wanted to fit in.
Right.
So how are they still at school? I feel like it's like 4 o'clock right by now.
Oh, yeah. And it's this school day just keeps on going because there's even more to come.
Right. So like, how is it all... the space-time continuum, like it isn't like the Doctor is controlling everything.
Doctor Who. Yeah, no, I question that as well. Like how long is, I actually have a note in here a little later. How long is this school day? Because after they're walking along on the bluffs by the school. And she's kind of explaining to him how today is a very hard day for her family. It's the anniversary of Robin's death. And then she says she would have been a junior this year. It would have been her first prom. And Nick just stands there like the sneaky lying bitch he is and listens to her talk. And then he eventually tells her that he loves her and they hug. Then Nick has a little flashback of the death of Robin and, you know, the whole kill scene. And he turns to Robin, or I'm sorry, he turns to Kim and says, I want you to know Robin's death. I remember it. I've always been really, really sorry about it. I mean, I know what you're feeling. I, and then the bell rings and they have to go back to class. So we don't know. Was he going to fess up there? Was he not going to fess up? Was he going to make up some lie and, you know, be like, I've done seen it. It was a crazy hobo. What did it?
Also, Mike, let me ask you, because you didn't go to school in the city, high school, so I didn't have an open campus, but was Wheatfield an open campus?
Oh, hell no.
Right. No. So, like, where are these people living that they're, like, open campus, sit outside, walk on the bluffs?
The only thing kids at my high school got away with was they would run across the street to Smokin' Joe's and then be like, we're on the res, you can't do nothing.
Right. I mean, we would have a lookout because the vice principal would stand on the roof, which I'm surprised didn't cave in on him. And when we got the all clear, we'd like run to our car senior year and be like, peace, bitches. We're going to get Chinese food and get drunk.
Right.
Drama club.
Oh, man.
And also, I just want to point out, and we'll get into it a little more in a few moments, but how is it that every girl in a fucking movie knows how to style their hair perfectly? And I'm like, I go to the salon, I'm like, me, make pretty. Like, I can't contour. I can't, like, I don't know. I don't understand. I never have.
I just pictured you clubbing money on the counter. Me, make pretty.
You make Susie pretty.
Oh my god, That was amazing.
And now that I'm letting the gray grow in, I'm embracing it. Like, I told my manager a few months ago, we do house party in the morning for our meetings, and he will join in. And he's like, Suze, why aren't you on camera? I'm like, Oliver, I look like a homeless Cruella de Vil right now. But I recently told him that I look more like a homed Cruella de Vil now that it's a little more under control. But I don't understand how in movies, like, girls do their own makeup. They do their own hair for prom. And it looks flawless. And I'm like, I look like Mimi from the Drew Carey Show.
Oh, Lord. But so, yes, after the bell rings, we cut to a burger joint and we see Wendy speeding into the parking lot with Luna Brow. And
it is a prehistoric outdoor Hooters.
Yes. Oh, my God.
I'm a little short.
Oh, the waitress comes over and goes, what do you have? And he's like, oh, I'm a little short on cash right now. And she goes, and Wendy goes, you can owe me. And he's like, oh. Well, in that case, I'll have a couple of burgers and a large fry, and what kind of beer you got, sweetie? And she's like, this is a drive-thru, honey, not a bar. And he's like, okay, take it easy. Don't get nervous on us. I'll have a large Coke. And then he points at Wendy and goes, she'll have the same. And Wendy goes, I'll have a small Diet Coke. And then the waitress is like, just a small Diet Coke? And she goes, yeah. And she's like, okay. And skates away, and Lou just leers at her ass. And Wendy goes, I'll get you one for Christmas.
That line is so funny.
So we see the two of them plotting. Wendy is very vague about what she wants to have happen, but she wants to get Kim and her family back. And Lou is all for it because he hates the school and he hates Principal Hammond. So plus he really wants to bone Kim. So he's all for fucking over that family. Now we cut to Vicky, Kim, and Kelly. Oh, sorry. Vicky, Kim, Kelly, and Jude playing tennis. Now they're back at school still. So school is still happening. This is where I wrote, how long is this school day?
Right. And now they're in gym class. It's like 7 o'clock at night.
Right.
I mean, you do remember school. It did take forever to get through the day.
True. But senior year, man, senior year was flying by for me. Granted, I had taken enough classes early on in my high school career that it was like I was able to leave by noon during my senior year because all I had was study halls after that. I'm like, well, I've already done all my credits. So,
they did away with early dismissal the year I was a senior. Oh. So I packed as many study. I'm not going to lie. Once the final class rank came out, I was like, fuck this. I'm graduating. And I had band lessons about every period for the second half of the year.
Yeah, I'd say my senior year was ridiculous. Like my first period of the day was film study, which was just a fun class. Then I had, two art classes. I had my advertising design and portfolio. And then I had a gym class. And then it was like lunch, study hall, study hall, study hall, study hall. It was like all these study halls. So I was like, I just took early dismissal. Which is why I was able to work at Media Play my senior year for pretty much the entire year. So,
but, nice.
Fun times, yeah. So, we cut to them playing tennis, and we see the groundskeeper, Mr. Sykes, cleaning nearby, and Vicky calls out to him. She's like, oh, Mr. Sykes, this is just for you, and she moons him, and you get, like, the tan line booty, you know?
Which was so prevalent in like, late 70s, early horror.
Yep. It's just like, oh, look at that tan line butt. And then immediately she gets in trouble. And Mr. Sykes continues to creepily watch the girls as they make their way to the showers.
Because he's making a mental note of that booty.
Exactly.
He's thinking it's WAP.
Oh, God. I got to say, I love the WAP memes that are coming around.
Like wings and pizza.
Exactly. There's so many good ones. But yeah, so then we see Kim and Kelly in the shower. No dem titties, just they're in the shower talking. And Kelly isn't sure she wants to let Drew bone her, but she's like, you know, if I don't, he'll screw somebody else if I don't let him. So Wendy's just like, well, you know, F that. Or I'm sorry, Kim's just like, F that. Like, if he's gonna, you know, screw somebody else, let him. You know, she's like, but no, that would kill me. I have to let him. So now we cut to Wendy in the locker room finding the torn yearbook photo of herself in her locker. And she thinks the girls are making fun of her, pulling some kind of weird prank, which I'm like, what does this mean? Like, why would she assume it's a prank? Like, what kind of prank is that? Like, hey, right, it's your photo.
Her photo isn't even defaced. And she's like, what the fuck are you doing, you dumb bitches? She's like worse than Regina George in Mean Girls.
It's like, I just didn't understand, like, what the fuck was the, like, why was she, what did she think they were doing? I didn't get it. But, so they take off, and it's just Kim and Kelly left in the locker room talking about Kelly's aversion to doing the horizontal mambo. And then she decides, like, maybe she will let Drew do her. And then suddenly we hear smashing sounds, like glass shattering. And they go off to investigate, and they see a shattered mirror. They look around. No one's around. They're like, who did it? So they start looking outside the gym, looking around. Nobody's around. But when they come back to the mirror, there's a big shard of glass, like a big knife-like shard of glass missing. And they make sure to point it out in case you missed it.
Can we also mention how they peek outside, as in outside of the school?
Mm-hmm.
Jamie Lee's got an open blouse. And
yeah, I wasn't complaining about that part.
No pants. Like, people don't really do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't complaining. But this is true. You don't really just
leave. No, she had very... Her boobs were very perky.
Yes. Yes, they were. I remember seeing Trading Places as a young boy and being very happy with that movie. But so they go back, they find the piece of glass missing. And when they you know, I'm sorry, I'm getting all discombobulated. I lost my place. Okay, so they go back, they find
it was because we were talking about Jamie Lee Curtis with an open blouse.
Yes, I got a little discombobulated. But so they go back and they find
the discombobulated or discombobulated.
Yes.
Boom, boom. So they go back and they find the glass all over the floor, but there's one shard, a knife-like shard, missing. And they do stop and point that out. You know, they're like, Kim turns to Kelly, and she's like, look, and points at the missing shard of glass, and the camera zooms in, like, in case you didn't see. Now we cut to Kim leaving. And she sees Mr. Sykes fixing an exit sign. She gets all spooked and runs away. Like, oh no, he's going to look at me again. Now, we cut from there to the prom being decorated. So it's like the gym being decorated for prom. And so Kim goes in there with Nick and the teachers, and they're going through the prom rehearsal. We see that they have to go backstage for their king and queen ceremony. And fucking Lou and Wendy watch from the background looking like fucking Boris and Natasha plotting against Moose and Squirrel. Like,
right.
I laughed so hard when it did the slow zoom on the two of them. I was like, tonight we get Moose and Squirrel. You know, it's like so bad. But now we cut to Mr. Sykes cleaning up the glass in the locker room, looking shady as fuck. And then we see Jude at her locker, and she finds the yearbook photo of herself taped inside, but this time with a shard of glass on it. Kelly comes up looking at Jude like, oh, bother, look, I found one too. So she found one in her locker, and they can't figure out why. So now we cut to cops searching the town, and they're talking to the lieutenant over the radio, telling him that they have blockades set up all over the town. So that, what the hell was his name? Leonard, whatever. The escape mental patient won't get away.
Leonard Mulch or something?
Yeah, it was an M name. I can't remember what the hell it was. But
can we also stop just to mention how, not mention, but question... Did all high school proms happen in the actual gymnasium until the 90s?
I think probably. So.
Yeah.
Because as long as I've had friends who were a little older than me who were in high school, their proms were always at some other location, including my own, up until my youngest sister graduated, which she's 29 now. So just saying.
Yeah, no, all of, like, everyone I knew had a prom in a different location as well.
Right.
But, yeah, I can't imagine what our prom would be like if it was in the gym.
Oh, my God. So many people drunk at my prom. I didn't get drunk until after because I was too afraid of getting in trouble. But so many people drunk at my prom, like, 3 days before her graduation. Ooh.
I didn't actually get drunk. I just got a little tipsy. Like, I wasn't much of a drinker then, you know.
Oh, no. I started young. Get the liver in check.
I was so afraid that I would get nauseous and not have fun times. So I was like, don't drink too much. But we see the, where were we? The lieutenant, blah, blah, blah. Okay, yeah.
Which always sounded like a voiceover. It didn't actually sound like he was talking. It always sounded like close, akin to Robert Stack narrating Unsolved Mysteries.
Which part did?
Anytime the lieutenant talked.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait, what? Yeah, no, you're not wrong. But so we cut to from the lieutenant getting the info about the blockades. We cut to Wendy talking to Lou on the phone, kind of plotting. Then we cut to Kim getting ready for prom. And her mother comes in, like, very confused, and she can't find her lipstick. Now, this is important, but the reason why it's important was cut from the fucking film. And that really irks me. Because this payoff ends up being kind of a, okay, why moment until you read the trivia. So, you know, she can't find her lipstick. She's all upset. She walks away. Kim's a little upset that her mom is, you know, kind of losing it since Robin died. Then we see mom and dad head off to the prom. A shadowy figure watches from the bushes, which I have questions about because we'll get to. We cut to Alex and Kim continuing to get ready. Nick arrives. Alex lets him in. We get a quiet moment where Nick guiltily looks at a picture of Robin before Kim comes down and they head off to prom. Then we cut to Wendy angrily waiting for Lunabrow. He shows up, honks. She goes out there and it's him and his cronies. No suit. Drinking booze.
It's in the trunk.
Yeah. She's like, where's your suit? And then, when you see his suit, it's fantastic.
Oh my God, he might as well be wearing one of those tuxedo t-shirts.
Right. Oh my God, it looked like he beat up a maitre d' and like
and stole his jacket.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, it was so bad. But so he takes a huge swig off of a bottle of Jack and he's like, "We're going to party." And he's like, "Anyway, you look good." And they take off.
And then meanwhile, at the car wash, I'm sorry, I mean Studio 54, I mean the prom.
Yes. Oh my God. Well, before that, we get the montage I was talking about where we see the dark school and we go like class to class. And it's a long fucking montage because I even commented, I'm like, what is the point of this? Are we showing what's going to happen later? Like, why are we just lingering on the dark school before we cut to Disco Gym? You know, it's like, it's crazy. But we cut to the prom, as you said, Studio 54. We see Jude and Slick come rolling in. Jude introduces Slick to Nick and Kim, and Slick slips Nick a joint. And he's like, a token. It's like, all right. It's like,
also, weirdo. I want to point out, because later in the movie it changes, but Jude's dress looks really, really green right now. So I put Jude as Poison Ivy.
I didn't even pay attention to that.
But then later, when they're in the rape van, and she puts her, not to give anything away, but when she puts her dress back on and steps outside, her dress is blue. Hmm. But it really looked green. And I was like, oh, look at her. Red hair, green dress. She's Poison Ivy.
It was all them Studio 54 lights.
That's probably what it was. And then we get the dance off against no one.
Oh my God. I fucking love. Well, first we see The lieutenant is watching the prom. Like, I didn't know that was a thing, but okay. So he's watching.
Well, nowadays it is.
Right. Then we cut to Kim dancing with her dad, and they're talking about how upset their mom, you know, mom is. And then we see Lou and Wendy with his cronies come walking in, and they just stand there. Like,
and if there was a line, this was probably cut, and then because it was cut and not trademarked or copyrighted, was in Goonies, but Luna Brow was probably like, hey, you guys.
You know what it reminded me of is like in a Western when the bad guys roll into the tavern.
And everyone just stops and turns like, oh, yeah. My stars.
It's the Luna Brow gang.
Right.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, they roll in. And Kim immediately is like, she runs from her dad. She runs up to Nick and she's like, let's show what we can do. And then we get several minutes of Saturday Night Fever for no reason.
But again, she can totally cut a rug. She was a great dancer. But oh, yeah. Still, it was the same fucking song. Of course, the song is called Prom Night.
Yeah.
Everything's all right. Not going to get uptight. I mean, I'm making up lyrics as I go because they were lame.
But it was very much to the tune of at the car wash.
Right. And then every song like that disco music played in the background throughout the remainder of the movie. And it really was just the car wash with like different. Ooh. Ah. Yeah. Shiny gold chain coke gland.
Oh, it was so bad. But yeah, so it's like the whole gym watches them do their Saturday Night Fever dance-off. Then we cut to the lieutenant checking in with his men. They still haven't found anything. And then we cut from there to the girls in the bathroom. And they're all talking about Kelly doing it with Drew. And they assure her that it's no big deal. And then Jude's like, it's just like getting a shot. And I wrote, says the virgin.
And also, I want to point out that Kelly is in a white dress.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm just gonna leave it there.
Well, I mean, technically, I guess she. Well, okay. Well, we'll get to it.
Well, not everybody should not wear a white dress their first time, but let's just think about the 70s and the perceptions about female things.
Right.
So she should not have been in a white dress.
Well, no. This was Kelly. Because remember, Kelly was, she was afraid to, she was still a virgin.
Right. So that's why I mentioned the white dress.
Right.
Because then we see her and Drew and she's about to give in.
Right.
And she takes the top off, but leaves the bottom part on.
Ah, gotcha.
So a white dress could make that needing you to go home.
I gotcha. Okay, I was going a different direction with it. I was thinking you meant like, you know, she wasn't virginal, and I'm like, oh, no, but she was virginal.
Oh, no, I meant like the way that people thought women's bodies worked when you're a virgin in the 70s.
Gotcha. Yep, okay. Now I follow.
Okay. Glad you're picking up what I'm putting down, friend.
I guess I was forgetting about how bad people were, how misinformed people were.
Yes.
But yeah, so they're talking about how she needs to just do it. And then we cut to Lou and Wendy dancing on the dance floor. Wendy looks bored. And Lou is just doing this, like, throwing his arms in the air shimmy. And she just kind of walks away and he doesn't see her go.
It's so fucking great. Because then he turns around and realizes she's not there. And he just walks off like nothing. He's like, I meant to do that. Right. Now what,
ladies? That's what Mr. Potato Head gets.
That's right. He's not going to find a Mrs. Potato Head.
Oh, Luna Brow. So now we cut to Drew and Kelly making out in the dark locker room.
Getting frisky.
She stops him because she's afraid of moving forward. He's like, but I like you so much. And then he unzips his pants like, just touch it. Touch it. You know?
No, he tries to fucking force her to give him a BJ.
That's what's I was just about to say. That comes up right next because he grabs her hand. He's pushing her. And she's like kind of like leaning back and then he starts kissing her. And
he's a fucking pig.
he goes from kissing, like it was the least slick maneuver you could think of. He's kissing, he's just like, yeah, get down there. And he just like puts his hand on the back of her head and starts shoving. It was terrible.
And then she yells, hate him.
She yells no, and he gets pissed off and he goes, what are you, some kind of fairy tale princess? And she goes, Drew, please. And he goes, oh, Drew, please. If you don't, I know plenty who will. And then he zips up, gets dressed, throws his boutonniere at her and leaves. And she's like, Drew, you bastard. And then she goes, oh, he'll be back. And I'm like, what the fuck, man?
And no, then, he's not coming back. Like, no. You're in the right here, Kelly.
Right. You don't need him. But I just wrote dem sad titties because we get a close-up. I was like, this is the worst, like, boob shot in a horror movie because it's like,
yes!
So sad. I'm like, I don't want to see sad boobs.
I mean, her boobs were still very happy and perky, but
right.
They fit the melancholy of the scene because he's a fucking pig and Kelly is better than that.
Right. I'm like, this is not when you want to show nudity in a horror film.
But like, I will say that this kill scene was, I think, was really awesome because of the slow motion.
Yes. So we see the killer, the masked killer, sneaking up behind her. And that, like you said, it's completely in slow motion. So, like, she's putting her dress back on. The killer comes up behind her, grabs her mouth with one gloved hand, and then takes the shard of glass. And you don't see it actually cut her throat. You see it go up against her throat. And then he says, now, Kelly, now, in this raspy voice. You see her eyes get really wide, a little spurt of blood, and then you see her hit the ground with a slit throat. It was a really cool shot.
Yes.
But, so yeah, we zoom in on dead Kelly while disco plays.
And meanwhile, in the poison ivy van, Poison Ivy's busy getting pollinated.
Well,
the vans are rocking, don't come a knocking.
Right.
Yeah, I did write that. But right before that, when we do the transition, we cut to the punch bowl at prom, and Drew is already picking up somebody else.
Yes.
Like, we cut from her dead body to her dick of a boyfriend picking up another girl. I was like, my
fucking
God.
Fucking scumbag.
Yep.
Hey, he's a man of his word.
Yeah, seriously.
Too soon?
Hey, he just went right for it. And then we cut to Slick's van a-rockin'. And we see Jude and Slick post-coitus.
all Slick shoes.
But do you notice, and this is in a lot of, like, older slasher movies, the woman is always completely undressed, so, like, uber-sexualizing. And the guy's like, I'm just going to unzip my pants and take my dick out of my tighty-whities.
Yep. Of course.
Because he's still, like, he's got his shirt unbuttoned, but he's all still put together. Because then he's like, I gotta fucking take a piss.
Yeah. And he breaks his glasses. So it's very, very key moment where he goes, we see them post, you know, post-humpty. And he's like, oh, man. And she goes, what? And he goes, I broke my glasses. And then he gets up to go. And she's like, where are you going? He goes, nature calls. And he walks, like, 3 feet from the van to take a piss. And, to take a blind piss because he can't see where he's going. And then, he and Jude both reveal that they were both virgins and that they're like, and sex was awesome. And I was like, I call shenanigans. Two virgins, the sex was not awesome.
Listen,
no, it's like awkward.
With a name like Slick, you know it was awesome.
No, his dick may have been slick, but they didn't know what to do with it.
Exactly.
Wait, where's the IKEA directions? I think even in Swedish, I could follow this.
Oh, old slick a dick. So we see somebody watching the van and watching Slick.
Lily.
And then Jude decides they should go fuck on the bluffs, even though Slick can't see shit. So,
but then they get there and she sets the blanket down and they start kissing. And then she's like, which one of them is like, never mind, let's go back to the van. I have some J's ard.
Yeah, it was
joints rolled.
It was Slick because he hears a twig snap in the woods and he gets all nervous. He's like, someone's going to see us out here. Whoa, was that?
Oh, I was like, who is possessing the podcast right now?
Yeah, because when you said that, Maurice, it was like. So repeat what you said.
That's what I said.
Oh, you said okay.
Yeah.
You whined like a Wookiee?
Yeah.
Is that the sex noise that teenagers made in the late 70s, early 90s?
No, that's my mating call.
I was going to say, that's Maurice's sex noise. He's like, hey, ladies.
But it's so funny. It's so funny because they get back to the van and he like opens up the cigar case.
He says, hand me the history book.
Yes, it was a history book.
Said, I'm like, no time to study.
And he opens it up and there's all these like haphazardly rolled joints. And he's like, she's like, oh yeah. So then they start smoking it. And then all of a sudden the doors fly open. And this is the part that, this is where the killer just totally becomes ludicrous to me. Because when he stabs Jude in the throat, he's bouncing up and down like a fucking. Yes, and he's bouncing up and down like a fucking bunny.
Yeah. He sounded like a cat.
Yeah.
I said, why is the killer making cat sounds right now?
Well, maybe he identifies as a cat. You cannot judge, Maurice. It is 2020. But then Slick slithers his slick dick way into the front and starts driving. What and up? This scene, it's like straight out of fucking Benny Hill.
But before that, though, I was impressed. I said, for a nerd in a horror movie, Slick held his own because the killer jumped in. He fucking punched him in the head and sent the killer tumbling back. Yeah, he did. He punched him right out.
No, he did. I know he punched him in the head.
Well, I thought he started backing
up.
Yeah.
So the killer like rolled out of the way. This is when it turns into a Benny Hill skit.
Yeah.
So the entire time this shit's going on, I'm hearing. So the killer is running and like hanging on to the door of the van, and yep. Slick Dick is like, get away, you fiend. And drive then some fine. He like ends up on the passenger side and like tries to choke out Slick Dick, which may or may not have been that for him, but whatevs. And then in a total like late 70s, early like 80s trope for horror movies, the van goes off the cliff. The killer jumps out at the last possible second. And then kablooey!
Yep. You get the van explodes into a ball of fire. And then we cut to Disco Inferno, but not really.
Still at the car wash, just different. depending on what the STI was.
But yeah, we see this dance montage, and I wrote, with a bunch of awkward whiteys just trying their hardest.
Yes, and I just want to also add, oh no, I'm getting ahead of myself. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the dancing was cracking me up, because it was just so, like, so stiff and awkward looking. Not that I could do better, because I can't dance, but that was
all right, hard. Mike, I have one word for you. Continental. All right, we really have no room to talk.
Oh, like I said, I don't dance.
Okay, I have no room to talk. I may or may not have mirror danced one or two times in my life at the Continental.
See, I was the guy that was just kind of sitting back smoking cloves watching the mirror dancers.
I mean, when in Rome.
I was the creepy corner booth guy. Oh, the Continental. Brings back memories.
Yep.
But, so then we do a close-up on Sykes getting drunk and looking all sweaty while McBride checks in with his officers again. Still nothing. Then we see Wendy and the goons plotting. Wendy goes off to the bathroom to try to put on mascara, but is out of it. And then someone comes in and she's like, hey, do you have any mascara? Then they don't answer. And she's like, fine, be that way. And then we see a gloved hand turn off the bathroom lights. So she turns. Now, Wendy, again, much like Slick, she kind of throws the horror movie expectations out the window here. You figure, you know, the bitch is going to get killed right away. But she turns and she ducks. The killer comes at her with an axe. She screams, she ducks, he misses, ends up hacking the axe into like the counter. She
stop calling him the killer. Call him Sparkles.
So Sparkles misses. And then he like she hauls ass out of there. She gets out of the girl's room, starts running down the hall screaming. Sparkles has to go back for the axe and chase after her. And he chases her through the dark school. You know, she's like, and this, I wrote, how is nobody falling while wearing dress shoes? Like, both of them had dress shoes. I'm like, you'd be slipping and sliding all over the damn place.
Also, I want to ask a very important question. Why are all the fucking doors in high schools chained all the time?
Right. We saw that last time with
Fessel. Yes.
They're just chained shut. Well, they don't want anyone playing the killer version of hide and seek because, you know, someone's going to die.
Right.
So Wendy heads upstairs and hides. We see Sparkles come searching for her. He looks in the room that she's in, but doesn't see her. So he leaves. Now, Wendy backs up and she backs right into one of those like the visible man dummies, you know, the ones where you can see all the musculature used in like science class and all that.
Yeah.
She backs into one of those. It falls over and she screams, alerting Sparkles to where she is. So she hauls ass out of there.
Right before that, doesn't she end up in another gymnasium? Because it looks like another gymnasium. Like, how many fucking gyms does this school have?
That's right. When she's running from him, she runs through a dark gym.
Right.
I forgot about that. You're right.
So yeah, how many fucking gyms does the school actually have?
A lot, apparently.
That's they must the one be a really rich district. That's Williamsville or Amherst or East Amherst.
That's the gym that part two takes place in.
Yes.
So she's running from the killer. She runs down to like their auto shop, which again, like my high school, we didn't have no auto shop. You had to go to Bosie's for that. But she's like trying to get her way out, but all the doors are locked. So she ends up hiding in one of the cars. Then Sparkles comes in looking for her. He sees her in one of the cars. He shatters the window. She backs out, grabs a broom. He comes running for her, and she pokes him in the belly with the broom, knocking him over. Very much like freaking Elijah Wood did to the coach in the faculty last week. Like, is this a thing with school horror? You gotta poke the bad guy in the belly with a broom?
Mm-hmm.
This is weird. But, so she runs and hides in the storage room, and while she's, like, hiding in there, like, she's, you know, stopping to catch her breath for a moment, and starts, like, just, you know, it all kind of comes crashing down on her. She starts crying, and then Sparkles continues the hunt. So she gets real quiet, holds the handle to the door, thinking, like, okay, he's coming for me, and we see this, or we hear this methodic dripping. You know, and then we turn and see that it's a little red puddle on the ground behind her. And we pan the camera up and we see all these buckets of red paint that are all drippy. But then out of nowhere, freaking dead Kelly flops down. And it wasn't red paint after all. It was Kelly's paint like blood.
But and, did you see before that? Did you see someone breathing?
Yes. Yes. That's
yes.
Yeah. So there was somebody in there with her.
You know who it was, right?
Miss Sykes.
Yep. But I thought it was a mistake. I thought it was the cameraman because I just saw the stomach like going in and out.
Yeah, well, there's.
Until I read the trivia.
Mm-hmm. And that's.
I saw the Sykes.
Once again, where I think they fucked up with the editing, you know, because it's like, I feel like there was a shot there that we didn't get to see of like maybe Sykes hiding in the shadows. But so she screams when she sees dead Wendy, jumps out. Sparkles gets her in the face with the axe, and then boom, bye-bye, Wendy. So we cut to one of the cops running into the school to tell the lieutenant in person that they found Leonard. They got him. And, you know, McBride is completely ecstatic. He's like, oh, now I can start enjoying the prom. It's like, okay. But then Mr. Sykes comes running up, very drunk. He's freaking out, saying that there's a killer in the school. He's trying to convince the cops and the teachers that there's a killer on the loose. They see that he's drunk and they take him away, ignoring his warnings. Now they can't find Mr. Hammond. So the principal's gone. Here's another red herring. The principal kept disappearing. Like it was like they were trying to make you think like, oh, maybe it's Mr. Hammond. they can't find him, so they have to do the prom king and queen ceremony with, I forget his name, the little Weasley looking teacher. They were like,
Mr. Willis or something.
Yeah, they're like, here, you can do it. He's like, oh, yep. No. Yeah, he looked all nervous. Kim and Nick go backstage, and they're getting ready to do their little ceremony. They take their positions, and Lou and the goons get in position to fuck things up. We see the killer, or Sparkles, come backstage, and he's looking around with his axe. Lou and the goons jump Nick, beat the shit out of him, tape his mouth and hands, and then kind of hide him behind a chair.
And then, because no one's going to see a blonde kid in a powder blue vest.
Just laying behind a chair.
Yeah, but it works out to his advantage, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, karma's a bitch.
Right?
And he looks like a potato.
Mr. Lunabrow Potato Head.
Well, he steals Nick's crown, and he goes and takes Nick's place at, you know, by the curtain. And he's standing there all happy. Now, this is a moment that was dropped as well. We see a goon behind Kim. What the fuck was he going to do? We never find out, because he's creeping up behind her. And then Sparkles comes up with the axe, chops off Lunabrow's head, thinking it's Nick, hits the electric box, gets shocked, goes flying back. The lights in the gym start flickering. Lunabrow's severed head rolls down the runway.
But let's also mention how when Sparkles like hits the electric, he goes and he falls down. And also, Lunabrow's only IMDb picture is his severed head. Over and over and over again.
Well, can you blame them? They're like, look at that potato head.
I mean, it's interjected with like a quick ad for, I don't know, whatever, for the boys or something, but it's only his severed head.
Oh my God, it was so bad. And then, so the crowd sees as the lights are flickering, they see Lunabrow's head and they just freak the fuck out and take off. So Kim comes running out, sees everybody running, sees the head. This is why I'm saying we don't know what the goon was going to do to Kim, because she just runs out from behind the curtain. And it's like, okay, well, you know, the goon is gone now. She goes running backstage looking for Nick, finds him all dazed and like, you know, taped up, helps to free him. And they start walking out of the gym. And then Sparkles shows up and says, now it's my turn. And Kim and Nick both start fighting Sparkles.
I just want to say that my prom was not this adventuresome.
No, mine either. And we didn't have a light up disco dance floor either.
Oh, we didn't either. Thank God.
But so now they're fighting with Sparkles, and we get the classic scene of the killer and the guy rolling around on the floor trying to choke each other. And the whole time Kim is holding the axe, like going like, oh, like trying to swing, but she can't. Oh, I might hit Nick. I can't. I got to get Sparkles. So eventually Sparkles sits up on Nick and is just choking him out. And, Kim hacks him in the side of the head with the axe. So Sparkles falls back, grabbing his head, looks up, and they lock eyes for a moment. And Kim recognizes the eyes. And we see the outside, the cops are arriving.
It's the killer... fraternal twin connection.
Well, they're not the twins, though.
Wait, I thought they were.
Robin was the twin.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Yep. So they lock eyes, and we see the cops arriving. The killer staggers outside, having flashbacks of Robin's death. As he's staggering toward the crowd, people start screaming. Kim runs out yelling for the cops not to shoot him. The killer falls over. She pulls off the mask, and it's Alex with lipstick and a massive head wound. And then we see a flashback that it was...
Alex with a head with lipstick and a massive head wound.
Yep, well, that's how it was. And then we see the flashback. We see that the shadowy figure at the beginning who saw dead Robin was Alex. And then he calls out for Robin as he dies in Kim's arms, and the credits roll.
Dead. Now,
here's the thing. This is why I said that lipstick moment really pissed me off. because apparently what they were trying to set up was, because Alex and Robin were twins, they were trying to set up that, like, he was traumatized by seeing his dead sister. Like, there was a whole scene that they cut out with the doctor talking to Mr. Hammond.
And confirming that they're twins.
Well, not only do they mention the twin thing there and how close the two of them were, but they also mentioned that Alex doesn't remember any of that day, that he's blocked it out. So they kind of show that Alex went through some shit after Robin's death, like went through some difficulties coping. So they're trying to lead you to believe that Alex was channeling Robin, like he was like a Norman Bates psycho type scenario.
Oh, yes. Right. Okay.
Because he kept saying stuff like, do you still like to play games? Now it's my turn. Like, he was pretending to be Robin. He put on the lipstick. Like, all of this stuff was supposed to lead us to believe, oh, it you know, he thinks he's Robin. But it was just, the ball was completely dropped. Like, you have to piece that together with outside information, which makes a lot of these scenes useless. It's like, if you're not paying close attention, like, why the fuck is the killer wearing lipstick? Is it just, you know, that he dressed up for the party? Like, what's going on? Yeah. Like, it didn't make any sense. So, yeah, a lot of the editing, I think, really fucked over what they were trying to set up with this movie. But yeah, little bit of trivia. Apparently, Jamie Lee did her own stunts at the end of the movie. We're fighting with the killer. That was all Jamie Lee, no stunt double, which I thought was pretty fun. And originally, the film was supposed to be given a PG rating, but the studio the studio was afraid that no one would go see a PG slasher movie, so they upped the violence to get it to an R rating. And that it interestingly enough, the first and only slasher film to be rated PG is one we will eventually have on this show, even if I have to make it my birthday choice, is Tourist Trap from 1979. That movie scares the hell out of me still, because I've watched it recently and there's a scene, I shouldn't say it scares the hell out of me, it scared me really bad when I was a kid, but there's one scene in particular that really gives me the willies still. I love that movie, but yeah. So, and then the remake of this apparently came out as PG-13, which is kind of funny considering the original was supposed to be PG,
right?
And then this part I found fucked up. Director Paul Lynch originally conceived a movie about a psychotic gynecologist to cash in on the Halloween franchise. I don't know how that cashes in on Halloween, but that's what it says.
Well, Dr. Loomis?
Apparently.
But, so we got Dr. Gyno and Dr. Loomis? Is that the reason?
He said apparently he was told by the studio that that would be distasteful, so he retooled it into this movie.
All right.
I'm like, a killer gynecologist. I don't think that one's been done yet. And so even after all these years.
Yeah.
And
I mean, Dr. Giggles could be reimagined, I suppose.
Right. I mean, we have the dentist, but we don't have the gyno.
Right.
Let's work on it.
Could we make The Hand That Rocks the Cradle a horror comedy musical?
Oh, I'm sure.
Somebody please make that happen.
I really hate that movie. But then the last but not least that I wrote down was Gene Siskel called this a watered down version of Halloween crossed with Carrie, which I thought was really funny. And then apparently another critic called it a combination of Friday the 13th and Saturday Night Fever.
I mean, neither are really wrong, so.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, overall, I will say this about the film. If you enjoy the late 70s and early slasher movies like that, and I mean, I know anyone listening to this will understand what I mean by the I like cheese dialogue. It's filled with that. If you can get past the cheesy ass dialogue and kind of the ridiculous nature of some of the plot threads, it's worth your time if you like those type of movies. If you're looking for a solid slasher movie, I don't know that I can recommend this one. I'm not a fan. I'm really just, I didn't dig it.
Okay.
Same.
Susie, you sound so defeated.
No, I'm okay with being an odd person out, but I know where Mr. Hammond ended up.
Oh?
Dead.
No, he needed to fly a plane. Because Airplane also came out in 1980.
Just don't call him Shirley.
That's right. And he'll want to know if you've ever seen a grown man naked.
Do you like gladiator movies?
Right. So that's where he had a secret second life where he was this great airplane captain. That's where he went. He was called away.
Oh, I got to watch those movies again. It's been a long time.
Which is part of why Mrs. Hammond was still kind of batshit crazy, because she couldn't differentiate between real and fantasy. So she thought that the airplane thing was all fantasy.
Ah, all right.
That explains
there's my
it all.
There's my idea for a crossover, guys. I rest my case.
And with that, do you guys have anything else you want to add to the movie?
No, I think if you haven't seen it, just watch it. Even if it's once, even if you don't enjoy it for the
if you haven't seen it, watch it just to see if you agree or disagree with us.
Right. And we don't need to know if you agree with me, because that would hurt their feelings.
Well, I'm pretty sure you'll think it's just as boring as we do.
I will say this. You should at least watch it just to see Luna Brow in action.
Right. And the 25,000 minute disco song dancing thing.
The Saturday Night Fever in a horror movie.
Yeah.
And the Sparkly Killer before Twilight.
So true. Because it lasts longer than in Saturday Night Fever, does that make it a Saturday Night COVID? Pre-COVID COVID?
Oh, too soon.
Oh, sorry, guys. All right. I'm done.
Well, before we wrap this up, we should mention our social media. So if you guys aren't following us on Facebook or Instagram, we're The Boogeyman's Closet. And Maurice is in charge of our Twitter, which is?
@ Boogeyman's The.
Thank you, sir. And we've been mentioning this in every episode. We are currently doing monthly giveaways just to kind of make the year a little bit better, since it's been such a shitty year. We currently have our September giveaway up. So if you haven't entered yet, go on over to Facebook or Instagram and join us in the contest. And at the end of the month, we will pick a random, entry and we'll call out the winner on social media. So definitely check that out.
And this package is really awesome. So awesome that I'm considering entering the contest. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to, but this is a really, really great package.
Yeah, I mean, they just keep getting better because, again, everybody, like, we've had so many great donations. We've been able to, between the three of us, we've been able to buy up a lot of, like, fun horror, kitsch and entertainment, along with some really great art from local artists. And then we've had some of those same artists also donate stuff. We've had a lot of fans of the show donate stuff. So it's just the prize packages have gotten huge. And this month I had a really hard time like omitting things for next month's package, because I'm like, I want to put more in here. There's a lot of fun stuff. So definitely check it out. I know we've had a couple happy winners already. So we're going to keep on doing this right through the end of the year. December, we're definitely going to have two. Susie, I'm really excited to show you one of the donations I just recently got. That's going to end up in one of the Christmas packages that I'm sure you're going to want. Because I want one. So.
Oh, and I won't let Shane enter either, because he feels that if he enters, it's really me winning, which is true.
Yeah. It's me. Same with me and Jess. So.
Brother and sister. Enter and then give me the really thing that I want.
There you go. You have people on the inside.
Exactly. I just want to say really quick, thank you to the Living Brain Dead for the CD. Happy to promote you guys. And again, if you have not checked out my friend Leland's band, Yellow Sauce, they have their latest release out, The Ballad of Bob Paul. It's funny. It's witty. It's just, it's a fun ride in rock music. And hopefully I will be able to score some merch from that band to give away in the future. But guys, keep continuing to support local artists. I hope that the stuff that we give out in the prize packs that are supporting local artists will inspire you to continue to support them. But it's so important, especially now, that support local. We're all going through a tough time. The pandemic is still going on. So be kind to each other. And I can't say it enough. I've said it like 12 times already in the last 26 seconds. Support local artists and music. And absolutely. Thank you for your continued support, because we appreciate you guys.
Oh, absolutely. And like I've said multiple times in the past, if you guys do want to join us for an episode, if you see an upcoming movie that is just right up your alley that you really want to talk about, please let us know, because we love having guests. I know we're probably going to have some returning guests in the future. I'm sure Dawn will be coming back. And Eric, actually, I just spoke with Eric today about something that may or may not be coming in November that he would like to join us again for. And speaking of guests, one last thing is probably going to be in next month's prize pack, but it might end up in November's. So I'm not sure yet. But Matt LeMay, our friend of the show who was on the Cabin in the Woods episode, he created an amazing piece of artwork based on something that we discussed in, I think it was episode 5, if I'm not mistaken.
And it's been a recurring theme.
Yes. And it is, I fucking love it. Like, I cracked up when I saw this. It's an amazing piece of work. I will definitely post it on social media. After we put it in the prize pack, I will post a picture of it for everyone to enjoy. It's amazing. So keep on checking our social media. We're going to continue to, promote local artists and friends and fans of the show with all of their artistic endeavors. So, yeah. But I think we need to wrap this up because it's getting a little long here. So anything else you guys want to add?
No, just if you haven't watched the movie, watch it. If you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't.
Absolutely. And we will we'll actually be back very soon for a special. So we have that to look forward to.
Dun, dun, dun.
As always, this is Mike saying goodbye.
See ya.
Kill, kill, kill.
Prom night. Everything is all right.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram at The Boogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.